Hello, everyone. Tiffany here on another episode of Deep Dive together with Stephen.
Yep. Hey,
now,
guys.
Stephen, I want to ask you, how much of your shopping do you do online?
Oh, lots of it. Most of it. 95%.
95?
Yeah.
Why?
It's just so simple, so convenient, you know, and you can do it late at night, you know, when the house is quiet.
Yeah. I run my entire household empire purely online. Yeah.
Okay.
Everything is ordered, you know, on an e-commerce platform, and I like to think that, I'm good at it.
But sometimes when you're shopping online and then you look at this item and you're like, ooh, flash sale, or ooh, last three items, and you're like,
okay, I get it? I'm quite a sucker for these things. Very sucker for these things. Then you see the countdown timer, right? Do you get affected by the countdown timer? Like, you've got 6 hours before.
Yeah, it depends on how much I really want that item.
Okay.
Yeah. But I try to give myself, you know, don't be a last minute shopper. That's when I think you're most susceptible to
right.
this.
Right. That's true. Yeah. And we're talking about this because there was a recent report on how three online retailers were caught using misleading website features, or what they call dark patterns, to pressure shoppers into buying their items.
And those dark patterns, like those countdown timers, like those like two items left, you know. So the Competition and Consumer Commission of Singapore has taken action against those retailers. But we see it everywhere on all our shopping platforms online, available through social media. So is it really possible to protect consumers, protect us from all these tactics?
Yeah, so is it, and whose job is it to keep us safe? Is it us, the consumer, the retailer, or the authorities? You know, that's what we want to unpack today in our episode. So we have Professor Sharon Ng from the Nanyang Business School. She's also the director of the Nanyang Centre for Marketing and Technology.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And we have Liu Saiming, senior advisor from the consultancy firm Behavioral Insights team.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's start off with taking a look at the average shopper in Singapore. Is it more like Tiffany,
like us,
you know, like us?
Like, yeah. Like, oh, you're like Tiffany, not me. Yes.
Sharon, what do you think?
No, I think most people now do buy things online. So that's the reality. Right, especially small items and things you can buy regularly. But I think there are also some things that I believe that a lot of people do go to the shop to buy. Things are experiential, things that you want to touch and feel, expensive products. In fact, if you go to VivoCity now, you go to Suntec over the weekends, it's still packed.
Right.
It is not like the stores are empty. So I think we do buy certain things online. But there are some items, some situations you want to do a family outing. You want to go to the malls, you go shopping together. Well, how much you purchase is a different question. But I do think people are getting a little bit of an e-commerce fatigue.
Okay.
And I think in some of our studies, we actually show that people are reverting back a little bit to social events or social situations.
But they're actually going to the mall not necessarily to shop. It's not like, I need to buy this, I'm going to the mall to buy it. It's more like, oh, there's a, I don't know, a pop-up of this shop or this item for food, you know?
That's true, but that's experiential, right? You're still going to experience something. And I think at the same time, if you think about it, when you shop, there's a very good chance that you may buy something.
Yeah, yeah.
So yes, there are things that we buy majority, I would say, right? 70-80% online.
Okay.
But there's still a certain portion that people will still buy in the shop.
Saiming, I mean, in your the research that you do as well, like, are there a lot of people who are like me, you know, when they see a sale, where, especially online, like these kind of like flash sales, are they motivated to act on these things?
Yeah, and I think we can take cues from actually how that shopping environment has been designed for us. I mean, if you look all over the world in different e-commerce platforms, what's clear from the Singapore e-commerce platform is discounts and making it clear that you're getting a good deal from that. So I think we can use that to get a sense of what the Singapore consumer profile is really like.
Is that different from other parts of the world? Or is everyone all... I imagine we're all out for a good deal. Yeah. All human beings, regardless of race, language or religion, so to speak, right?
Yeah, I suppose that, but I mean, if you... I mean, thinking about these platforms, I think in Singapore, convenience is an important part, but we don't see as many, for example, same-day deliveries as we see in other countries. So, for example, in Amazon in another country can do that in the same day. We don't really see that here. So I suspect that that deal portion is something that matters a lot more to us.
Would that same-day delivery make things better or worse?
I suppose it really depends on what you mean by better. I mean, better if you really did need it and you got it in that time, then yes.
Okay.
But if it's encouraging you to buy things that you don't really need or want, then... Yeah. No, that's not going to be very helpful for your budget.
I think it's the latter we're talking about, right? Yeah, buying stuff that you often don't need. Simply because I felt like, it was such a good deal that I couldn't pass it up.
So Sharon, tell us more a bit about these dark patterns that we talked about earlier. What are sort of these, you know, marketing tactics that some retailers might resort to?
Oh, there are so many of them, right? So people put the countdown, as you said, last days. They put in a certain reference pricing that makes you think that, oh, the original price is a certain amount and by contrast, I'm getting a pretty good deal. Right. There are stores that actually also change the lightings, change the smell.
Wait, what?
To make you feel that the sensory part of it actually drives a lot of our behaviors.
Like what kind of smell would drive me to buy more? Like the old smell?
Well, there isn't a certain smell, but if you're going to Aeon, has their own Aeon sense.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So when you go in, it triggers familiarity. It already triggers a certain degree of, oh, I know that I'm in Aeon now. I'm in the certain mode. I'm shopping in Aeon. So there are many environmental cues that companies can do. So if online, for example, they may have opt-in. So all the things are tick for you first. And you need to opt out before. And most people sometimes forget to opt out or they forget to do these things. So these are little tricks that companies can do to actually make you do things that you may not actually want
But I guess walking into a mall, walking into a shopping center, having a certain feeling, a reminder of a certain scent, I mean, we kind of expect that. But online, it's almost like I feel like I'm being pressured into doing something I may not ordinarily choose to do.
Yes.
So that's when we're asking, is that right? Is that unethical? In fact, and compared to false advertising, how different is that?
So in false advertising, the deals and the things that they put on are factually wrong. So for example, they tell you that it's the last two items and actually it's not. A lot of hotels will tell you the last two rooms left.
Right.
Right? Or the deal's going to expire. So if it's factually wrong, then that's clearly false advertising. But if it's actually true, as in I have two, but I highlight to you to make you feel a little bit more impulsive, make you feel a little bit more urgency to do something. Mm-hmm. It's not really false advertising. But yes, it is a version of a dark pattern that I'm trying to trigger so that you're more likely to act. But it's not fake because I really have two rooms left. So it becomes false advertising when I actually have more.
Yeah, I think it is a bit of a grey area at times. So, for example, I mean, looking at that hotel example, I think, you know, more recently you see things like two rooms left at this price.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they could increase it by a dollar and say, but I didn't lie. It was really at that price.
That's true.
But it is, you know, I think deceiving us into what's really left and urging us to buy something that we don't really need right at that moment.
And I think the ethical part also comes in if it's targeted at vulnerable groups.
Such as
the elderly people who might not really detect it, kids who might not really be able to detect it. In fact, normal people like us, we probably don't detect it very well unless you're very conscious about it. But the vulnerable groups, they might be even less able to detect that. Right, and I think that shifts their behaviours in a way that we probably don't want to happen.
But when it comes to adults, one would say, well, you can make your own decisions, you know. We're not cheating you, so to speak. We're just misleading you, so to speak.
That's why it's very hard to enforce. Because it's very subtle. And they are not per se lying. Right, so therefore, this type of cues is very hard for actually regulatory authorities to actually enforce and say, okay, you're doing something wrong and therefore I'm going to fine you for doing that. False advertising is easy. Right? And if you think about marketing in general, it's persuasion, persuading you to buy my products and making it look prettier, making it look better, giving a better deal. So that lie is actually sometimes fairly grey.
But why are we so easily misled? Like, I mean, when you were just talking about it, I imagine sheep, you know, we're so easily misled. So why is it that it somehow works here in Singapore?
It's not just in Singapore. I think it works actually globally. It's just being human. There's a very famous quote, we are feeling creatures that think. We are not thinking creatures that feel. When we buy, we feel first, then we think. We like something. I buy something that's really cute. I might not need it, but it's so cute. I will find a way to justify why I need it.
Yep.
I have a pair of jeans that I bought. I know I can't fit, but hey,
I only
maybe
got it for,
one day, yeah. No, yeah. I can fit. And
aspirational
purchase, right? So we are not always thinking and rational when we buy things.
Mm.
So if I give you two items left, you are aroused. Mm. Arousal changes the way we behave, right? We want to quickly get it. And then we figured out.
And actually, let's say I get one of those last two rooms. I'm like, yes, I scored the deal.
Right.
I feel good about it.
Yeah.
So actually, I mean...
Why not?
So in a way, you've bluffed me, but you've given me something that I can feel good about, right? So then one would say, well, yeah, you have received something in return.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now, when the Competition and Consumer Commission is taking some of these companies to task, these platforms, actually, they're not doing anything really wrong. We're just saying, come on, guys, that's not very nice.
Mm.
Right? Well, it's not illegal.
The three that they took them to task, they actually lie.
So that was false advertising.
False advertising.
Okay, which is illegal.
Yes. Okay, but I want to say, I wouldn't know. You know what I mean? As in, how would I know? So on one hand, I trust that what they are saying is right, because I am not going to go into their website and try and find out whether the countdown timer works, right? So I think there's something here about me as a consumer. Like, what is it about me that makes me trust that what they are saying is true?
Yeah, I think, in Singapore, we live in a high trust society.
Ah.
And we've built that over years and years of work. And we're shaped by, how our environment is designed. So whether, in this case, maybe the shopping environment we see there, it says, 25 people are looking at this item right now. We trust it. I mean, it seems plausible that 25 other people are looking at the exact backpack that I want. And it makes us feel like, okay, if other people want it, maybe I should get it.
Yes.
It's running out of stock. I better get it soon.
Yeah.
So that's something that makes it quite difficult for the individual consumer to observe. And we do really need to think about how we design our environments to encourage more responsible purchasing.
Mm. So as a consumer, how do I figure out, that this it's really true that there are 25 people looking at it? Not at all?
You can't figure it out, right? We'll never know unless I dig into the algorithm. I can do coding and I go and read the code behind it. But
it is very difficult. I mean, these companies are so huge compared to that individual consumer. They're pouring lots of money into how they design these platforms and how they market their products. So it is very difficult. I think just being slightly aware that these patterns do exist and then being a little bit skeptical does help. But ultimately, I think it is more the responsibility of that platform or the commerce provider to design it in a way that is safe for you to shop online.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I do as well. Like, if I know I'm going to buy a water bottle,
then
I'll go to one e-commerce platform and then I'll see how much is it, and then I'll see how many vouchers I can stack and whether the flash deal is coming. And then I'll go to another platform and I'll do exactly the same thing. And then I have both of that in my cart and waiting, to see whether or not at some point it triggers and then I hit that button.
Yeah. Mm.
But sometimes I do notice that right after that so-called flash sale, I don't actually see the price going back to normal. Like, it's the same price.
Yeah.
So, on one hand, do you think that it's this, environment where we get this information overload? Like, I have so many options. I am just I think that I'm smarter because I have options. I've done my homework. Do you think that we have this, not just sensory overload, but an information overload, which makes us feel extra confident as a shopper?
I think definitely so. I think this is a world where there's so much information, right? And I think I do exactly what you did.
Oh, I'm glad I'm not alone.
I put it in the basket and then I wait. And you're right. And many times, actually, the price doesn't actually change. Then they'll say it's a different sale.
So is that false advertising? Is that false advertising, though?
In theory, yes. But they can cover it up by saying that it's a different sale, right? So now it's a Labor Day sale. After that, it's a different sale.
I see.
It's just so happened that there are different sales.
Right.
So I think, for example, for the regulatory authorities, they are actually warning companies that have closing down sales throughout the year.
Yes.
Actually, I was talking to them just recently and I was telling them there's one particular store that I knew and it was perpetually on closing down sale.
Yep.
It's 7-day countdown. And then when you get to day one, last day, it's like, go back and then go that way. And now that is false advertising, right? And that they do try to catch it. But if, let's say, they tell today is Labor Day sale, tomorrow is 3-3 sale. you can't accuse them of lying. Although, in theory, they're probably not changing the price. Mm.
Right.
But they have a justification, right? The onus to prove false advertising is actually quite high. You need to be able to show that they actually lie.
Yeah.
Because whenever you say, like, the last two items, it's the last two items for today or for, you know, this hour. I didn't say exactly how many items there were, right?
Exactly.
And there's no real incentive for, you know, people selling these items to want to, or I guess this for them, they'll say, I have no choice, everybody else is doing it. If I don't do it, I'll be the only one left behind. You know, so is it then, I guess, the onus is on us as consumers to really just be more firm and be more daring to say, okay, I will walk away from this last two items, this, you know?
Or are we always going to be caught on the back foot, right?
It is hard. I think it goes both ways. I think the companies need to also be more conscious. I think companies that have a very strong brand actually are less likely to do that.
Because they have more to lose.
They have a lot more to lose. Exactly. So therefore, if you buy from a company that has a strong brand, at least I'm more likely to trust. It goes back to the idea of trust, right? Mm. If you're a big brand, I'm more likely to trust. They are less likely to do whatever we think that you're doing. And as a consumer, I think we also need to be a bit more conscious that since you're driven by heart instead of head, let's take a breather, put it in the basket first, and let's not click buy.
I'm also using my head at the end of the day, to be honest.
No, give it a breather.
Okay.
Give it the cooling down day, and then we see what happens. Right? If you still want it, go ahead. I mean, it may make you happy, and that's okay. You buy happiness, that's fine. Right, but instead of being impulsive and just buy on the spot, which I'm sure everyone does a bit of that.
What about the role of AI? Like, have you seen companies using, say, AI to compel shoppers to buy more?
Well, I mean, AI is currently being used to personalize everything to you.
That's true. Mm.
If I personalize it to you, the chances of you liking it, wanting it, has to be much higher.
Mm.
Right? Because now, using AI, I know what you like. I can do micro-targeting, literally knowing exactly what you want and go straight and pitch it in a way that you like it.
Mm.
So that increases desire, that increases matching in terms of preferences and product, right? So clearly, the higher the personalization, the more likely, doesn't mean you immediately buy, but the higher probability they're going to want to buy it. So therefore, AI is a powerful tool for marketers.
I think one thing that I'm particularly worried about is actually how these platform or commerce providers are actually using AI in their own design process. I mean, now it makes it much easier, much more productive for them to use AI. But if, you know, like Sharon is saying, that they're using AI and the AI is actually designing the platform in a way that is using these dark patterns, then that actually does become dangerous.
Right.
And I think the other key thing is that because these designers are using it, they also can psychologically distance themselves from that decision they're making in how the platform is designed.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it much harder for these companies to design responsible platforms.
As a marketer, we also have MarTech, which is the marketing technologies, right? And the technologies that people used to try to do greater personalization, data collection, and using that, drive analytics and insight into what each person likes, and then target it. So I've heard how companies can use the data to actually know exactly, do you like chicken wings, say fried chicken or no fried chicken?
Yep.
Mm. What do you like to pair it with? How do I actually target it together so that you're more likely to order that?
Okay.
Now, that is personalization at the extreme level. And on top of that, depending on how I think you like it worded in the pitch, and how do you like the design, I can easily change things. With AI, you can scale this.
What I've been doing, I have an old car, so I've been looking to get it fixed up, and I've been looking at shops who can do the body work and the paint work, and I've been researching using AI, asking it questions, comparing the types of shops, and it ended up recommending a certain shop to me, even though I never asked for a recommendation. I just said, you know, compare A and A on these two shops. So I realized that the shop that it recommended had a lot more online reviews, a lot more ratings. So it had more information for the AI to feed on, you see. Whereas in the old days, I would say, hey, word of mouth, tell me which shop you went to, you know. So I'm saying that can also skew our choices because...
Totally.
Right? And the AI will do that convincingly because it thinks this really is the best choice based on what it can find, right?
Yeah.
That's why marketing now, in the past, people talk about SEO, which is to optimize your Google search.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about GEO, optimizing AI search.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, looking for that shop, I suppose you should combine your search with, I mean, what you can find online, but also word of mouth if you can, and that just corroborate what you see, just in case, I mean, talking about dark patterns, you've got fake reviews as well.
Mm. The next step is to talk about how we can also better protect ourselves, which is, you know, how you can make better choices as well. How do you think we can be better shoppers? I mean, I feel like whatever that you have just told me, it feels like the technology is I'm up against this technology, this behemoth of like a technology. So how am I going to win this?
You just have to be more conscious. I mean, you just have to be more conscious, as I said. Now, make sure that you don't buy on impulse if you can't. Now, take a step back. At the end of the day, there's no perfect answer to what is a good purchase.
Yeah.
Any purchase that makes you happy, you may pay a slightly higher price, but if it makes you happy, that's okay. I think what happens with AI is it scaled a lot of the things that in the past people can do. It's just that in the past, it's a lot more difficult to do at scale and really at the micro level. Mm. What AI has done is just make it a lot easier to scale and able to personalize at a much, much deeper level. But fundamentally, in the past, we also buy things we don't need.
I guess from the government's perspective or maybe the regulatory authorities' perspective, is it always going to be a cat and mouse game? Is it always going to be hard for them to, you know, help us to, you know, tell us where the line is to make sure that none of these, we don't fall into these dark patterns? I mean, I think false advertising is quite clear cut, but how about the dark patterns?
Yeah, I think, I mean, consumer education is important, but like we talked about, you know, these companies have huge amounts of resources.
Yep.
And they're using them to encourage us to buy the things that they want us to buy. So I think from a regulatory perspective, I think doing research to actually understand where that line is. So for example, with countdown timers, some platforms need countdown timers. So for example, if you're buying movie tickets or concert tickets, you can't hold on to them forever. But where is that line? So is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes? And how does that change our behavior? I think is an important question for the regulator to ask in order for them to go out and then speak and engage these companies on how they should design their business.
But I don't see them, even if they know, they're not going to step in and say, I'm going to regulate it now. You cannot give a countdown timer of more than X number of hours or whatever, right? It doesn't make sense. I mean, this is a free market and we want to have that kind of free market forces play out. So at the same time, you want to protect people.
These examples that we have for you right now is what we see.
Yeah.
But there's nothing stopping companies from coming out with new stuff.
Yeah.
These are just simple nudges, right? Changing of little things. And you cannot always catch up. You cannot catch up fast enough. And they are also not illegal if it's not false. Therefore, it's also very hard to regulate. So when we were talking about it with authorities, I mean, education is probably the best way to go. But education requires a certain degree of ability to restrain your own behavior. Mm-hmm. It requires a certain degree of self-awareness, right? That you're not buying that jeans that you don't need, right? And so that level of awareness, can we really populate that to the whole population? Right. I am not sure that it's entirely possible. But we do your best, right? I think you do your best to at least give people the alert that know, be aware of your own behavior. Know what you're doing, okay? And as much as we can, help them. But I don't think there's a foolproof method at this point.
Yeah. And I think we sometimes know the answer. Like I recall not so long ago, certain beauty parlors, every now and then they'll close down. People have bought packages worth thousands of dollars. They lose their money. But when you think about it, people still buying packages at other existing beauty parlors, knowing, and you know for well that it's possible they could close, right?
Yeah. I guess you really want it, no matter how much education you have, you have, you know, about the situation, and knowing that you're going to be duped, you're going to buy more. I think if you really want it, you want it, because if it makes you happy, it makes you happy.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming, sharing these insights with us, all of you who are, you know, watching. I think many, just like us, all love our shopping, and it seems like there is no clear answer here, but to always remind yourself just what it is you're looking at and being aware that it's possible this could actually be too good to be true.
Yeah, so, you know, be a smart shopper. And you know, if you miss the deal, maybe it's just not for you. That's yeah. what I tell myself.
No,
all
wait.
The, time.
The deal always comes back. There'll always be another deal,
oh,
a
yeah.
better deal.
5, 5, 6, 6, 7, 7.
That's right. Okay. All right. Any thoughts, any comments? Let us know. We do love to hear from you. But otherwise, that's a wrap for this week's Deep Dive. Bye for now.
Bye.